KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in El Sobrante.
I live in Emeryville.
I live in Antioch, California.
Potter's Creek.
Pleasant Hill.
I live in Albany, but Albany doesn't have neighborhoods.
Coming up, we go on the hunt for the perfect straw.
Hear that sound? That's like air.
Well, you got a crack too.
Yep, I've not finished my drink and the straw is no longer sucking.
Then, what state bills were signed into law this session and which ones weren't? We get a legislative update.
This was a very busy year, especially for the governor's first year in office. A lot of big ticket items really did get done.
And we explore why designers don't like the San Francisco city flag.
It's a relatively complex flag.
The beef over flag designs and more coming up on Cross Currents. Today we're starting the show talking about straws. Yes, drinking straws. Who would have thought they could be so controversial? We sent KALW's Alice Wolfley to try them all out and ask why single out straws when there are many larger environmental problems to solve.
I'm on the hunt for the perfect straw. I want to find out which straws suck and which ones fail to suck.
Well, I hope you're thirsty, Michael, because we're going to be drinking a lot of drinks this evening.
I bring along my friend Michael Swingin. We start at Prize Fighter, a trendy bar in Emeryville with signature cocktails.
Trying to figure it out, if I'm cool enough to be in here.
What do you think? What do you think you're going to get?
Gin and tonics have straws, right?
Our drinks arrive with straws made out of wheat.
It's literally made out of straw.
It's a straw?
Yeah, I kept thinking it was people were saying it's plant-based, but no, it's literally a piece of straw. Definitely a different texture than the plastic.
The wheat straws look cool, but after only a few sips...
It's already broken. I wasn't even trying to be aggressive with it. It doesn't even work.
Before I finish my drink...
Hear that sound? That's like air.
Yeah, well, you got a crack too.
Yeah, yep. No, I've not finished my drink, and the straw is no longer sucking.
The straw laws are a lot like the plastic bag ban. They started at the city level. 5 Bay Area cities passed straw laws, followed soon after by the state law. It says businesses that serve drinks are only allowed to hand out plastic straws on request or make them available in a self-service area. If you need a plastic straw because of a disability, you can still get one. The law doesn't apply to fast food or takeout places. A lot of places now give out paper straws, and if you've used one, you know they're pretty disappointing.
It's very soggy and kind of unpleasant.
Can it still convey liquid from the glass into your mouth?
Let's find out. Yeah, it still does its job, but it's just not very attractive.
After a few drinks, we need food. So we go to Saul's Deli in North Berkeley.
I'm getting like 1940s vibes. It's like black and white checkered tile. The old school ketchup bottles where it's like the ketchup bottles are glass, you know what I mean?
The straws here are metal. Peter Levitt is the manager at Saul's. He got rid of plastic foodware years ago after seeing a viral video of a plastic straw being pulled out of the nose of a sea turtle. The video is thought to be the genesis of the anti-straw movement.
I've never forgotten it. The image remains in me. And just the image of the ocean waters in the middle of nowhere just looking like plastic dumps. And we just kept asking ourselves, is there another way we can do our work? Another way we can put a straw in front of people that wouldn't have the ramifications of a plastic straw?
But straws are only a small fraction of the plastic we throw away. Starbucks and McDonald's are voluntarily phasing out plastic straws, but what about all the other plastic they use? A lot of people across the political spectrum are questioning these laws, like Tucker Carlson on Fox News.
Drinking straws are an irrelevant part of America's very real garbage epidemic.
Even Elizabeth Warren agrees with him.
They want to be able to stir up a lot of controversy around your light bulbs, around your straws, and around your cheeseburgers. When 70% of the pollution, of the carbon that we're throwing into the air, comes from 3 industries.
So are these laws just here to make us feel better? Peter Levitt doesn't think so.
The fact is, if it doesn't get lost or stolen or dropped in the garbage, it can literally have thousands of reuses. If you count the number of iced teas and Cokes and sodas we serve, that's literally a few hundred thousand plastic straws a year that we didn't generate.
The metal straws at Saul's also work really well.
I like how the straw conducts the coldness, like the straw gets cold.
I get the liquid in my mouth. It's just like, you know, it does what it's supposed to do.
We leave Saul's and set our sights on San Francisco, where a million straws are used every day. The law here is stricter than the state law. Most plastic foodware will have to be compostable by 2020. We go to E.T., a pint-sized boba place in Chinatown. Michael's overwhelmed by the countless fruit and tea flavors.
I've never had boba before. Whichever one you recommend.
An extensive survey of straw varieties wouldn't be complete without boba, because you need an extra thick straw to suck the chewy tapioca balls from the bottom of the cup. These straws are paper.
They're like a blow dart or something. It's like you could hunt like small birds with these things.
Alice Poon, the owner of E.T., says paper straws cost 3 times more than plastic. She also gets a lot of complaints about them.
Yeah, 70% people complain.
Despite the added cost, she didn't raise prices. And even after all the complaints, she says she supports further restrictions on plastic.
If good for the environment, I very, very support it.
The paper boba straws worked well, but in the end, the verdict was unanimous.
Metal straws get my vote for the highest rate of success.
Metal straws get my vote too, for sure.
And what about straw laws? Are they useful or just a distraction? Eliminating plastic bags or straws won't drastically reduce the amount of plastic that end up in landfills. But maybe these laws are small victories that will create cultural awareness. They might pave the way for action that can make a difference. In San Francisco, I'm Alice Wolfley for Cross Currents.
Alice Wolfley reported that story as part of our summer journalism training program. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. So the straw law went into effect this year. Before that, it was called AB 1884. Well, this legislative session, California Governor Gavin Newsom had dozens of bills on his desk to consider signing into law. And the range of issues was wide, from police use of force to water use, from vaccine exemptions to microchip implants in pets. Some he vetoed, others he signed. San Francisco Chronicle reporter Dustin Gardner reports on the state capitol. He joins me now to talk about some of the big bills he's been covering and whether they were signed by the governor. Let's start with one that I've been thinking about is SB1 and how the state, you know, has been kind of challenging these Trump administration environmental pushbacks to the state. What's happening with that?
Yeah, so this is a bill that really didn't get a lot of debate until the final night of lawmakers' session. Senate President Pro Tem Toni Atkins, she pushed this through on the final night. And then the big surprise was Governor Newsom's decision to veto the bill. Basically, the day after it passed on that final night, he said that he was going to veto it. And it was a head-scratcher for a lot of progressives and environmentalists in particular. Basically, the bill would preserve California's labor and environmental protections at where they were at the end of the Obama administration and to essentially prevent any sort of Trump administration rollbacks. But Governor Newsom said he felt like the bill doesn't really give the state any additional powers to push back against the feds, and he was worried that it could inadvertently complicate some delicate negotiations with Central Valley farmers and water rights and regulations intended to protect fish species from extinction. So that was kind of a political hot potato for the governor.
Mm. Progressives not happy about that.
No, not at all. It was, you know, it's one of the few bills this session where the governor really kind of got sideways with some of the more progressive lawmakers in the legislature.
Mm-hmm. And let's move on to some others. What about SB 276? The Bay Area is a place where vaccines are a big issue. What happened with that bill?
This was probably the single most controversial piece of legislation that sucked up the most oxygen all session long. This is a measure dealing with medical exemptions for vaccines. Going back several years ago after the big measles outbreak tied to visitors at Disneyland, the state legislature started tightening exemptions to vaccine requirements for, you know, for students entering kindergarten. But as the state has tightened some of those exemptions, they, for example, got rid of a personal belief exemption. The number of medical exemptions, students, you know, whose parents have a doctor's note basically saying that they cannot be vaccinated for some medical reason, the number of students with those exemptions has just skyrocketed. It's more than quadrupled in the last several years. And so the legislature lawmakers wanted to act because they're concerned that many of these exemptions are fraudulent. And so basically this bill would tighten those exemptions and basically create ways that the state can investigate doctors and review areas where there seems to be an irregular spike in the number of exemptions.
Another big issue here in the Bay Area has been the rights of gig workers. So that was AB 5. What happened with AB 5?
Yeah, this is another real hot potato here. AB 5, the so-called gig worker bill, this would affect many workers from Lyft drivers, Uber drivers, to all sorts of other independent contractors in many industries, you know, even people like freelancers who work for newspapers. And this, it's essentially redefining labor law and preventing companies that have expanded the number of independent contractors from doing so. And it's codifying a state Supreme Court decision known as the Diamond X case that establishes a 1-2-3 test to determine if an employee or contractor is truly independent from the company they're doing work with. And this was a huge victory for labor unions. They fought really hard against some of the tech companies and others to get this through. And the governor signed it, and now we're at the start of what looks like could be a pretty expensive political battle. The tech companies have said that they will spend at least $90 million. This is Uber, Lyft, and DoorDash, at least $90 million on a ballot initiative to overturn the law at the November 2020 ballot box. So that's going to be a very expensive fight that'll probably drag out all the way through November.
What about AB 1482, tenancy rights and cap on rents?
This was another pretty significant victory for the governor. There had been a lot of back and forth this session about legislation to cap rent increases and create more tenant rights. And the governor negotiated with real estate groups, housing advocates, and the compromise they came up with caps rent increases to 5% statewide plus inflation for the next decade. It also creates just kind of a general tenants system of rights, basically creating a statewide standard for just cause evictions. And it would apply to tenants that have been in their unit for a year or longer.
And I want to talk a little bit about AB 392. That's the police use of force, which, again, has been one of the issues on people's minds in a lot of the Bay Area, in Oakland. And, you know, it's we've covered it a lot here on KLW as well. So if you can talk a little bit about it and what was the decision by the governor?
Yeah, this was another big victory for progressives this session. There are a lot of big ticket items that got through this year. This it's creating a new standard for when police can use lethal force. A lot of experts consider it the most stringent standard in the country. Basically, before this bill passed, the standard was based on what a typical police officer would think is reasonable under the circumstances. And this bill is changing that definition to say that they can only use force when it's considered necessary. And experts who study this, you know, think that's just a much tighter standard. But at the same time, I should add that civil rights groups, including Black Lives Matter, for example, they were not very happy with some of the changes that were made in the bill. The original version went further. But at the end of the day, you know, you had a pretty, you had the governor, Assemblywoman Shirley Weber from Los Angeles, and a wide variety of civil rights groups that did support the final bill, along with some of the police officer unions, and they did get it through.
Mm-hmm. Any other bills that you want to highlight here? I mean, I'm looking at the list, and there's everything from drinking water to horse racing to, like, pet chip implants.
There's so many things they do here. We talked about some of the really big things that got through this year. Like I said, this was a very busy year, especially for the governor's first year in office. A lot of big ticket items really did get done. Another big one that got through, the governor actually signed this week, is SB 206. This is changing rules for student athletes in college and their ability to have rights to their name, their image, their likeness. And you know, under current NCAA regulations, students aren't allowed to benefit, or student athletes, athletes in school aren't allowed to benefit financially from those things, generally speaking. Mm. And this is allowing them to do so. And the governor and supporters of this bill, including Senator Nancy Skinner from Berkeley, they've really framed this as an issue of social and economic justice. In their words, they feel like a lot of students, particularly students of color, have been, basically bringing in millions and millions of dollars for schools and not personally benefiting from that. At the same time, coaches and the institutions are drawing in millions of dollars based on their performance when they're, you know, the ones putting their bodies on the line and often, you know, facing serious injuries. So that was another very high profile item. The governor rolled it out, announced it in a press video with LeBron James and some other prominent athletes. So another big kind of headline grabber for him.
All right. Well, we'll end it with sports then. Thank you very much, Dustin. San Francisco Chronicle reporter Dustin Gardner reports on the state capitol. We've got a link to his work at klw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next, we've got a story from our friends at 99% Invisible, hosted by Roman Mars. This one is from their very first season back in 2010, but it's about an issue over design that's still relevant today.
The five basic principles of flag design.
According to the North American Vexillological Association. Vexillological.
And vexillology is the study of flags.
Sexual, that makes it sound weird.
Number one, keep it simple. The flag should be so simple that a child can draw it from memory.
Before I moved to Chicago in 2005, I didn't even know cities had their own flags.
Most larger cities have flags.
Well, I didn't know that. That's Ted Kaye, by the way.
Hello.
Flag expert. Totally awesome guy.
I'm the editor of a scholarly journal on flags called Raven, a journal of vexillology.
And that first city flag I discovered in Chicago is a beaut. A white field, two light blue horizontal stripes, and 4 6-pointed red stars across the middle.
Number two.
The blue stripes represent the water, the lake and the rivers.
Use meaningful symbolism.
The red stars represent significant events in Chicago's history.
The design of the Chicago flag has complete buy-in with an entire cross-section of the city. It's everywhere. Every municipal building flies the flag. Every 20-year-old's messenger bag and hoodie has one. It's a distinct symbol of Chicago's pride.
When a police officer or firefighter dies in Chicago, it's not a United States flag on a casket. It's the city of Chicago flag. That's how deeply it's gotten into the city's civic imagery.
And it isn't just that people love Chicago and therefore love the flag. I also think that people love Chicago more because the flag is so cool.
A positive feedback loop there between great symbolism and civic pride.
So when I moved back to San Francisco in 2008, I researched its flag because I'd never seen it before in the previous 8 years I lived here. And I found it, I'm sorry to say, sadly lacking.
Well, let me start at the top.
Number one.
Keeping it simple.
So simple that a child can draw it from memory.
It's a relatively complex flag.
The main component of the San Francisco flag is a phoenix, representing our rising from the ashes after the great fires of the 1850s.
A powerful symbol for San Francisco.
I still don't really dig the phoenix. Design-wise, it has too many details and too many colors, and it doesn't really work at a distance. But having deep meaning puts that element in the plus column. Behind the large phoenix, the background is mainly white, but the flag also has a substantial gold border around it.
Which is a very attractive design element.
It does look pretty good. But here come the big no-nos in flag design.
No lettering or seals. Never use writing of any kind.
Underneath the phoenix, there's a motto on a ribbon that translates to gold in peace, iron in war. Plus, and this is the big problem, it says San Francisco across the bottom.
If you need to write the name of what you're representing on your flag, your symbolism has failed.
The United States flag doesn't say USA across the front, but the good news is this name thing might not be completely our fault.
A city flag in a state that has its own name on the state flag would tend to echo that.
Yep, the California Bear flag says California Republic on it. So maybe we can blame this all on our capital city, Sacramento, which is awesome because I love blaming Sacramento for things.
I like to say that in every bad flag, there's a good flag trying to get out. Well, the way to make San Francisco's flag a good flag would be to take the motto off, because you can't read that at a distance. I would take the name off, and the border might even be made thicker, so it's more of a part of the flag. And I would just simply take the phoenix and make it a great big element in the middle of the flag.
But the current phoenix has got to go.
I would simplify or stylize the phoenix, depict a big wide-winged bird coming out of flame. Emphasize the flame.
So next time you find yourself with a vexillologist, I am never going to say that word right. A flag expert? Park yourself there. You're in for a good time.
By the North American Vexillological Association.
See, it's not just me. It's not just me.
"99% Invisible" is hosted by Roman Mars. And if you don't know what it looks like, you can see the San Francisco City flag and decide what you think at our website, kalw.org. That's also where you can subscribe to our podcast. And tune in tomorrow at 5. When immigrants send money back home, it's not only about dollar amounts.
Lo que llegamos a percibir o escuchar de alguna gente es que ellos estaban reteniendo su dinero en efectivo.
Robert explains how the flow of people sometimes depends on the news. Some days, he says, the store was empty after the news of impending ICE raids. But a little later, people line up to send all of their money out of the United States. He said everyone talks about Trump's politics. The community is afraid.
Y todo mundo habla de la política de Trump. Todo mundo viene acá con miedo.
What tracking remittances can tell us about the U.S. That's tomorrow at 5. This is the Grant Levin Trio from San Francisco. They're playing at Bird and Beckett in the city this Saturday. The Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Imran Ali Malik, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, True Quinn, and Joshua Sirotiak. Our engineers are James Rowlands, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.